Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Next, we'll head to the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco with Thuy Vu.
Thanks so much, and welcome to Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. Our guest today is Olivia Poole, founder and CEO of Vena, a tech company devoted to building technology that helps women leverage their social connections. The company has an app, Hey Vena, that enables women to find and connect with new friends anywhere and at any stage in their lives. Olivia, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I had read that you actually came up with this idea while looking at an online dating site. Is that true?
It's true. I mean, it was really the planting the seeds along the road. And so it was a hybrid of trying to use online dating and realizing that I was making more friends than love connections. It was creating a women's social happy hour networking group where I saw women coming together every single month to network like friends, and then bringing kind of those two ideas together to make Hey Vena the women-only app for friends.
So then how do you go about matching up people? Is it an algorithm that works very similar to the way a dating site might, or is it slightly different?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's all about compatibility. So we're a little bit more data-driven than some of the kind of more fun and like, hey, photo-driven apps that are out there. Mm-hmm. But because for friendship, it's really actually very important to have information. Like, what life stage are you in? Like, what are you looking for? You know, how long have you been living where you're living? You know, what's your lifestyle like? You know, are you a daytime or a nighttime person? Like, you know, do you want to go out for a glass of wine, or let's meet up for breakfast? So those are important information points when it comes to meeting a new friend.
So are you able to track how many friendships you've enabled through this app?
Yeah, so we've made over 150,000 new matches in our beta phase over the last 9 months alone.
Nice. You know, though, I mean, I guess some people might look at this and say, well, you know, making friends is a basic social skill. Do we really need an app for that, too?
I mean, at the end of the day, yes, because it makes your life easier. I mean, at the same time, like, we've always been able to date, but a dating app makes it easier to find the right person. We're busy today. Like, our lives have changed to be more technology centric. Like, we manage our social circles on online. And so we can make a technology that makes it easier for you to find someone to be your friend that's going through the same thing as you, that's really beautiful. Also, on the other side of things, you can look around a room and see who you're attracted to for a date. You can't look around the room and see who else is maybe a breast cancer survivor or is also looking for a new job. But those are things you can't tell by looking at people. So having an app makes everything a lot easier.
Who is your biggest competitor in this space, and how do you make sure that you stay ahead of your competitors?
Yeah, it's really interesting because to this day, we're still really the only platform where women only can find platonic, you know, women connections.
You're the only one.
Yeah, there's a couple like apps out there and so many offline groups. There are a lot of alternatives to using the platform. But at the end of the day, we are the only major player really in this space.
Not bad to have a space for yourself for a while. I'm sure somebody else will come along, and you know how it happens with a good idea, right?
Hey.
But flattery is flattery. Imitation is a good form of flattery.
Exactly. We've seen some dating apps actually launch friend-making sections to their app. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's not the same as having a safe community specific for women only.
So is entrepreneurship in your blood? What were some of the earlier positions you've had in your career that molded you into the businesswoman that you are now?
Yeah, so I'm the child of two parents who followed their passions and turned their passions into business. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely in my blood.
What kinds of businesses did your parents have?
So my mom's a horse trainer, and my dad is in the construction industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they both actually just loved building and art and creating in these lifestyles that they loved. And so they turned those into businesses that thrived. And ultimately, you know, being in the digital age, my passion has been in technology. And so I've worked in so many different tech startups, from Bitcoin to enterprise software to educational programs for aspiring engineers. So those are all the things that really were my kind of business school for launching my own company.
Wonderful. I'm Thuy Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. My guest today is Olivia Poole, founder and CEO of Vena. How did you get the name for your company, Vena? What does that mean?
So Vena was originally an iteration on Ladies Who Vino, the offline group that I started. But in researching the word, we discovered that it's actually a old Scottish woman's name for beloved or friend.
And well, that's apropos.
Yeah. And then on top of that, it's the literal translation of female friend in Icelandic.
Very nice. Well, what is your favorite thing about being an entrepreneur?
So my favorite thing is really being able to change people's lives at a scale, being able to make people's lives better, not just for the immediate community around me, but with technology, being able to create a platform that's affecting millions of people around the world.
What do you not like so much about being an entrepreneur?
Your boss. You're never going to have a harder boss in your entire life when you work for yourself. They'll get you up at 5 o'clock in the morning to respond to emails. They never let you go to sleep or go away. And vacations are always like, well, really, do you need to take a vacation?
They're always around, darn
They're
it.
They're always around. Oh my gosh, my boss will not let up.
Then how do you unwind? Do you have time to unwind? You must be working a lot.
Yeah, well, for me, friendships are everything. It's not only my business, but it's my passion, and it's at my core of, you know, what I'm here on the planet to be and do and create for the world. And so I love to spend time with my friends, whether it's a dinner party or a hike or something like that. I really love, you know, I'm an extrovert, so unwinding and being around my friends really helps me just comprehend the world and see the opportunity ahead of me and just relax a bit.
What surprised you the most about entrepreneurship? This is your first time out as a founder and CEO, right?
It is.
Congratulations.
The biggest surprise, I mean, that's a really tough question. The biggest surprise is that everything is kind of a surprise. So at the end of the day, you're really just, you know, okay, what's the next thing? And, you know, we know that there's always going to be surprises. We know that it's never going to be exactly what you think it's going to be. My biggest surprise is really that everything changes the day after you launch. When you're working on a product, you know, you're working on it, like, you know, you're kind of creating something. The zero to one is like a really special experience. But once you launch your product into the world, suddenly you're very accountable to, you know, people who are emailing you incessantly or calling or all of these different contacts. And it completely changes everything inside of you. And I don't think that's something that's really heavily discussed. And it's something that I was totally unprepared for, was how monumental that shift between like 6:59 in the morning on January 26th to 7:01 January 26th. Those were completely different lives.
It became more all-consuming? What do you mean? Changed you in what way?
It's so hard to describe, and I'm guessing that's why it's not been written or shared a lot about. Yeah. But you suddenly, like, it's like you've been struck by lightning. And suddenly you're, like, you're more alive. You're more, you know, you're more, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just completely changing, like, of
it's a whole different level of energy.
It's a different energy. I don't think we slept for like a whole like 12 days after launch. We were trending on the App Store within a week, and we're just like, oh my gosh, there's so many people out there who really need this.
That's a good change. In the little amount of time we have left in this segment, what are the three best pieces of advice you can offer to an aspiring entrepreneur or business owner?
One foot in front of the other, like, just don't stop going. Just keep moving. You know, you're climbing a mountain. There's going to be obstacles. There are going to be roadblocks. You're going to run out of supplies. But just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you'll find that next thing. Another piece of advice I have is just talk to as many people as possible. Ask people about your idea early and often. Don't hide. Don't be afraid to share your ideas and what you're building. If it's the right thing, people will be excited about it. Mm-hmm. So don't be too like behind closed doors and isolate yourself.
You don't have to be in stealth mode all the time.
No, I think it's really important to be talking to your customers and talking to the media and talking to the community and really making sure that what you're doing is actually resonating.
Third tip?
And the third tip is just don't stop believing in yourself. The number one thing that's going to stop you is being afraid. And so you have to just have an inherent belief in yourself and your ability to, take that next step.
All valuable tips. We'll come back and talk more with Olivia Poole about some of the biggest obstacles and failures she's faced and how she scaled the wall to success. Scale the Wall is powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. I'm Thuy Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Youth vaping is a serious problem. One issue, flavored vapor products that help adult smokers switch, but may also appeal to youth. To address it, Juul Labs stopped the sale of non-tobacco and non-menthol-based flavored Juul pods to over 90,000 traditional retail stores. Learn more about Juul Labs' efforts to combat youth vaping at juul.com/youth-prevention. Juul Labs, for adult smokers only.
Hi there, I'm Thuy Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. You can get more information by going to npm.com. Entrepreneurs and small business owners always face challenges, and what they need to do is scale the wall. And how do they do that exactly? That is exactly what we're going to find out by talking to our next guest. Joining me is Olivia Poole, founder and CEO of Vena, a tech company devoted to building technology that helps women leverage their social connections. The company has an app, Hey Vena, that enables women to find and connect with new friends anywhere and at any stage in their lives. Olivia, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, a pleasure. How many users do you have so far, and how does the company make money?
So while we're not sharing our user numbers right now because they just change so rapidly, I can say that in our first 2 weeks, we had more than 100,000 users.
And, that's awesome.
In typical consumer app nature, is we're not in a phase of monetization yet. We're only literally less than a year since we even started building software. So it's been a really rapid cycle for us.
Yeah, it's you want that market saturation first, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, our first step was actually building out the whole product. And then the next step is market saturation.
What's been the biggest challenge in getting everything running smoothly and now thinking to the next step?
Yeah, so, you know, the biggest obstacle for us in our beginning was how do we convince, like, the majority of VCs being, you know, older men, that women's friendship is important and that it's in high demand and that we actually is a problem we're solving with technology. So,
and how did you do that?
It was a lot of education about how the social psychology behind, you know, how men make friends and how women make friends differently and why those relationships end up playing back in lives. It's a lot of education on just, you know, how does society work and how is friendship working today in the 21st century? And not just for, you know, women in their 20s, but for women in their teens and women in their 50s and 60s, who our app really reaches that really wide market.
So as you're going to VCs, making these presentations, I would assume mostly to men, like you said, how do you convince them to go and back a company that will target primarily women and women's friendships?
So in our case, we had to get our product to market really quick. to actually show, hey, it's not just, you know, us as Silicon Valley women saying, yes, we need to make software for women to make friends. And it couldn't just be, you know, hey, we have, you know, 1,000 women in San Francisco. As soon as we like let the word, the cat out of the bag, if you will, we had so much traction. Like we had, you know, press coverage globally. Mm. We had, you know, hundreds of thousands of women signing up for this platform, a wait list beating down our door. And that itself, the data alone was enough for guys to say, oh, okay, maybe this is more than I thought it would be or mm-hmm. different. So a lot of it was in that, in creating stories and a lot of storytelling about, hey, like here are examples of, you know, how, what it's like for a woman to professionally network. Like, how, where does a woman go when she's looking for her next job? What happens when you lose a spouse or you become a mom or all of these things, and how influential your social network is to not just surviving those experiences, but actually thriving through them.
So what would you say is, now that you've got the capital, you've launched, you've got the users, what's the biggest challenge you're facing now?
Scaling technology. We're a really small team, and our—
How many people do you have?
We're a team of four.
Yeah.
So our media coverage would allow our users to really think that we're so much bigger than we are. You know, the market that we are really just infantile product ended up reaching was not used to seeing early stage technologies where things break and things, you know, sometimes stay broken for a little bit longer than you'd think. And so being able to, you know, bring together the right team has really allowed us to rebuild our entire system to actually reach everybody.
But now you need to scale up that team.
Now we need to scale up the team. And hiring is really challenging. You know, when you have a product that is consumer facing for women, mm-hmm. You know, everyone asks me, like, do you just want to hire women?
And do you?
No, of course not. I mean, I want to hire the best people for the job. Yeah. I always make it's a pipeline problem joke that inversely for us, where, you know, we want to work with people who understand our problem and are passionate about it. And there's plenty of men who are passionate feminists, mm. who are believers in helping women in technology. And it's really been a little bit of a challenge to say, hey, like, you know, it's not just some, like, fun, silly app. Like, this is a real business here.
Yeah. I'm Tui Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall. Here with me today is Olivia Poole, founder and CEO of Vena. You have a long, your career prior to this was primarily in marketing. And have you had any failures, big or small, either in that marketing career or at your current startup? And what have you learned from it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're doing it right, you're failing often, quickly learning and going after the next thing. I think some of my biggest failures are the points where I maybe needed help and I didn't necessarily reach out right away.
So why not? Why did you not reach out?
I think that you're expected, or as a woman, you think that you are expected to know everything. Like, admitting that you don't know something immediately puts you at maybe a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. But now I just feel really open about, hey, I don't know this. Like, hey, I need help. I love to reach out. Like, reach out early and often is my biggest motto to myself and the entire team at Vena.
Biggest lessons that you have regarding how to deal with challenges for the aspiring entrepreneur?
Yeah, so challenges are always going to come. The number one lesson is expect challenges. The number two lesson is don't give up on yourself. You know, you have to be your number one champion, and you have to have that belief in your core that you are the best person to solve this problem. And it not just that you can solve it, but that you will figure out how to do it and make sure that you're building the right connections to help you. Which I guess leads into number three, which is networking. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, there's a saying that says it's not about, you know, what you know, it's about who you know. And then there's the other one, like, your network is your net worth. There's so many sayings around how important these relationships are and maintaining those relationships from a point of being genuinely, authentically caring about people and giving as much as you can. So when it's time for you to ask for help, those people don't just think of you as a person, you know, who's asking for handouts. Yeah. They already know that you're a person who's dedicated to it being a symbiotic relationship.
So you're plugging away at this company, working really hard. How do you get some time for yourself and to kind of unplug, unwind, and recharge?
For me, it's always about time with friends. I love
you just to go to your app and swipe and decide who you want to spend time with.
Well, that and also like maintaining the old friends too. I mean, I grew up a Girl Scout, so make new friends but keep the old is a song that I sing my entire life. So maintaining those relationships, whether it's just a dinner party or going out for a hike with a friend, that's really how I unwind. That and a good nap.
That's always good. Olivia Poole, much luck to you.
Thank you.
Olivia Poole, CEO and founder of Vena. Join us every Friday as we scale the wall powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. You can get more information by going to npm.com. I'm Thuy Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
So you sit down.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining me right now is an amazing guest and my dear friend, Dallas Michael Sear. He's the creator of Ignite Purpose. What's up, brother?
How are you doing, sir?
Good, man. So tell us about Ignite Purpose for the people out there who don't know what that is.
Ignite Purpose, the ultimate coaching process. It is a transformational brand helping people to ignite their purpose or reignite their purpose. I sometimes work with entrepreneurs who have outstanding businesses, but they've lost the zest for life. Their relationships are struggling and they're they feel like, man, I was going at such a good clip. Yeah. What the heck happened? You know? And then coming along to figure out exactly where they're getting blocked and stopped and having them go to the next level.
So who is the common person that you feel like you're working with that has those types of struggles? Now, I know a lot of people do, but is there a specific type of person that you're working with?
They seem to be coaches and authors and entrepreneurs themselves or desiring. People who are like high-level executives that are desiring to break out and finally create the thing for themselves. Or somebody who has a business idea and yet they've been hesitant to start to build and create it. Also people who are coaches and they haven't yet hit the six figures in their coaching business yet.
So Ignite Purpose, I love it because I feel like so many people, whether it's igniting their passion or their purpose, whatever it may be, why do you feel like so many people are not in alignment with their purpose or their passion and haven't yet ignited it? Or maybe lost the flame, right? Maybe they had it and then they lost it.
It's interesting. Sometimes I work with people who believe that they had it and really what they had was an achievement mindset. Okay. They had a goal mindset, which is great. I don't knock that. Yet what they were focused on is just getting to that next thing, that next goal. And once they got it and they realized it didn't bring them all the joy, love, peace, happiness, money, and sex that they wanted in life, they felt deflated, you know? Yeah. So I wonder, even people who think they had it, if they really did. But the answer, I believe, is because of what we're conditioned, like the way that we're conditioned. Our society is not built on, hey, what is it that you, like when I say purpose, I believe about not just having this one thing that you're here to do. Yeah. It's also about living on purpose. So it's knowing your purpose and living on purpose, regardless if you know it now or not. Yeah. And so eventually I want to get to the core with somebody and help them find their soul's divine purpose, like really feel connected to why they're here
why
and what they're
actually
here to do.
Here.
Exactly. Yeah. In addition to just living on purpose in the meantime versus just waiting for that, you know, apple to fall from the tree, hit them on the head, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. And too many people are sitting around waiting for magic. But I think the reason why is because we're not conditioned. We're taught to go to school, you know, play it safe.
Only in Eastern culture do they usually teach you about purpose and fulfillment, and Western culture is more about the science of achievement and goal orientation and arriving at a destination.
Right.
I love that you're all about purpose, because I feel like until somebody really is in alignment with knowing what their purpose is and being congruent and in alignment with that every single day, they're not really living authentically and they're not really becoming their best self. And I always tell people, like, you're never going to find your purpose. It's not under your bed. It's not in the closet. Right. You're not going to find it when you're driving. You need to just simply make the foundation of your purpose, growth and contribution, and build from there. And as you start to become your best self by growing and you start giving more, then you'll find a purpose to serve that's greater than yourself. And so I think growth and contribution is like the foundation of what everyone's purpose should be. So, you know, I know that you weren't always an entrepreneur. You have an incredible story. So what did you do before you were the creator of Ignite Your Purpose? And then I want to go back to sort of the beginning of your story, because it's really interesting about how you got to where you're at.
Yeah, before Ignite Purpose, so I've been, I had an, another brand called Passion War, and it was still coaching. This was only 2 years ago. I just decided to rebrand, but there was a reason for that. Originally, I was part of what I do is help people to harmonize and balance the masculine and feminine energy in their life. I also help them with Eastern philosophies as well as Western. Like we dig deep on the spiritual nature of what their path is about. So I love that you brought up, you know, the Eastern and those philosophies, because I studied a lot of Buddhism and Hinduism, and that's how I kind of bring both the Western and Eastern together in my work. Prior to that, and I still do that, I still incorporate that, but ultimately, before coaching in general, which was I've been coaching now for 7 years, I was a financial planner. So I did that also for 7 years. I was with a specific company, still operating somewhat independent, and then I went completely independent after year five. So that's for 7 years, I built a financial planning practice.
That's what I love about you, is you went from financial planner to transformational coach and speaker.
But well, before that, I was a hip-hop MC and a b-boy.
No, that's the even better way to say it. From hip-hop, right, b-boy, DJ to financial planner and entrepreneur. Creator of Ignite Purpose, Dallas Michael Sears joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. Take me to the part where you were doing the hip-hop stuff, because that's what I think is even better.
That was over, I mean, well over a decade. It started at about 15 to 25. I was part of a b-boy crew called Wild Style B-Boys, and we would go to Providence in New York and Boston. We'd go to, we would just, anywhere outside of a gas station, we would just start breaking out.
So cool.
And just hit the ground.
I hope you have some footage of that, because I want to see that.
You know, it was back in the day of like VHS type footage. I know it's out there somewhere.
No smartphone footage.
Yeah, I'm sure it's out there somewhere. But I personally do not have any of it, unfortunately.
That you want to share.
That I would, I would absolutely share it regardless.
I was going to say, you give us some B-roll clips, we'll cut it in.
I would love that. I would, if I had, that'd be fantastic. But I was also a battle MC. So a big part of like, you know, now helping, a big part of like what I'm doing right now with the program Speak Express Impact. It's a program that I'm launching. And it's helping people to speak more authentically, to express themselves more confidently, and to just impact more people. And I feel like all these pieces of my journey are coming together so synchronistically perfect for this moment. And that's part of what I teach people, is like to look back at all of the pieces of the puzzle and recognize nothing, you were never off your path. Even if you felt for a moment you were off, there is only the path.
Well, go back, because I think, you know, there's stuff that you haven't shared with us yet about how, you know, you had seasons of massive adversity and you were conditioned. you grew up with circumstances that most people would say, I can't be successful because of those circumstances.
Yeah, well, when I was b-boying, I mean, at the time I was living in an apartment with my mom, little 11 by 11 room. We were living in the hood. You know, there was times when I was really young, my dad was still with us before he, my dad left when I was 11. So before he left, there was times when we were struggling and we would get assistance from the church in order to have like a good full Thanksgiving meal. I remember my dad being on unemployment and us being on welfare for a short period of time, and him jumping from job to job to try and figure out like what his path was or what he was here to do, and never even really figuring that out. You know, that was a big part of his journey and his struggle, something actually I didn't even find that out until recently. You know?
So how did you ultimately decide that who you were going to become mm-hmm. was so much more than the circumstances you grew up with?
Fortunately, I had this inner pulling. And I believe if everyone would take time to listen mm-hmm. internally, like a lot of what I do is help people like tap back into their own internal guidance system. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't do anything for anybody except help them to listen better yeah. to themselves, you know?
Yeah.
So back then, I just had this feeling, this internal feeling, like I can't put words to it. I don't know what it is, but it's pulling me towards something. And I only know that if I don't keep attempting to figure it yeah. out and move, you know, forward, whether it's like looking for mentors, reading books, just being a yes in life
yeah.
to whatever was showing up and just trusting, just knowing that this feeling in my gut is because I'm here for something more. If I just know if I don't follow that, whatever it looks like, no matter how scary, messed up, I know if I don't follow that, then I'll never fully be happy and fulfilled.
So what's
just
your
trusting that gut feeling?
So I think that's awesome advice. But for the person out there who says, you know, you did it, but I'm still struggling with self-doubts, sure. limiting beliefs, and the circumstances that I either grew up with because I have a limiting story playing,
sure.
or maybe still today, I believe that I'm in a circumstantial situation
yeah.
that's limiting me from becoming the successful individual I want, whether yeah. that's being an entrepreneur or just in business or a career path. The person out there who's self-sabotaging themselves still,
yeah.
what do you say to them?
So I don't believe in self-sabotage. I believe mm-hmm. we're so well conditioned that we do things in order to take care of ourselves. So mm-hmm. unconsciously, we're doing things to keep ourselves safe and happy and comfortable. Even though there's something deeper in us pulling us in a different direction, causing that resistance. Mm. So technically, I don't believe it's sabotaging necessarily, although that is absolutely one way to look yeah. at it. Now, in that space, if you're in that space and you're still struggling in that place, the best thing that I can say is that when I was bankrupt, you know, after being a financial planner for 5 years, I recognized it was not for me. Yeah. And it was after hitting having the best financial year of my career. And I'm sitting on this balcony of this 5-star hotel room. Yeah. My girlfriend's getting ready. And I just realize, crap, now what? Yeah. I did it. This is what I've been fighting for 4 years straight. Now what? Mm. And this feeling of emptiness and hollowness just clicked. And I just became viciously depressed, couldn't do my work anymore. And I spiraled out of control, went bankrupt. Two things happened. I decided to seek a way out. Right? Mm. Reading books, just looking for a way out. So if you're in that place, just continue to seek. Two, as I was looking, a couple years went by when things weren't really progressing all that well still, and I recognized I was learning a lot, but I wasn't being congruent. I wasn't living what I was learning. I was in the, yeah, I know that stage. Always saying, yeah, I know that. And reading the books, but not literally living the principles. Mm. And so I would have that person start to question, like, what do I think I know? And what am I actually living day to day?
As we wrap up, brother, I want to do a quick little 15-second, I call it stadium pitch. Mm-hmm. Giant auditorium, like a Joel Osteen, 80,000 people. We got entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs in there. Full stadium, you're about to take the stage. You got 10, 15 seconds to share your best advice with them. Take the stage.
You're here for a reason. Mm. Period. Do not forget that there is something you have to offer. Like, there's 7.5 plus billion people on the planet. There's no one that has your face, your voice, you know, there's no one that has your story. No matter what it looks like, it's yours. It's yours. Mm. No one can share your message. No one can have your voice. Be you and just be courageous in it.
I love that.
And just know that that's why you're here. Whatever it is that you want to express.
Well, I can honestly say that for the people out there, if you're trying to tap into igniting your passion, if you're trying to tap into igniting your purpose, this is the guy for you right here. Where can people hear more about you, brother?
Go to, right now, they can go to speakexpressimpact.com. They can also go to adversitytoabundance.com. Adversity and then the word to abundance and speakexpressimpact.com. One is just like an opportunity to connect with me. And the other one is the program that I'm launching right now.
Pleasure
and you can find me on Facebook.
Pleasure to have you on the show, brother.
Always.
Make sure you guys follow this guy. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month. It can cover a car payment or payback loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They are super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. Bank of America was recently named Best Bank for College Students by Money Magazine. With so many new and returning students preparing for the start of the school year in the weeks to come, it's critical to have the right bank account for student needs. April Schneider, Bank of America.
It's very important to build a strong financial foundation early in adulthood. At Bank of America, we're committed to helping students start off on the right foot by providing them with best-in-class products like the Advantage Safe Balance Banking Account, along with educational resources such as Better Money Habits.
Bank of America's Advantage Safe Balance Banking Account allows students to bank without the worry of overdraft fees while providing them with full mobile access to their account. Eligible students under age 24 also don't pay a monthly maintenance fee. This account was named Best Student Account by Money Magazine and is used by over 1 million clients. For more, visit bankofamerica.com. That's Bank of America.
How can you scale your company globally? I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us to answer that question is Rod Drury. He's the CEO and founder of Xero. Rod, it's a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
Hey, Matt.
So I know that you're an expert at doing this. Your company is doing billions. Tell us, how can we scale our company globally?
Yeah, sure. So Xero is in the small business market. We provide online accounting for small business. Our last public number was about 700,000 small businesses spread across 180 different countries. And we processed about $1 trillion of financial data last year. We've raised about $400 million in total. We're about 250 annualized run rate at the moment. And we operate about 1,500 people across four main countries. So we've been really thinking about how do we make life better for millions of small business owners. First thing that we needed to really scale was the capital. So we were kind of interesting in that we almost went public from day one. We listed in our first year. And the big thing that allowed us to grow was we saw the technology change of the cloud. And what the cloud did was fundamentally change the distribution cost of getting software to small businesses. And we thought there would be a new global platform which connected small businesses together and allowed them to do their books. So that's a bit of background about Xero, and you know, we've really focused on how to scale all over the world for the last 10 years.
That's fantastic. So you've obviously done this yourself. You've scaled globally and you've helped businesses all over different countries around the globe. So for the majority of our audience, I'm an extension of them. They're entrepreneurs, they're aspiring entrepreneurs, and they themselves have not gotten remotely close to the level of success that you've been able to create for your company. And so let's break it down to the beginning entrepreneur who's maybe in their first few years. How can they start to first scale their company and then scale their company globally? Do you have some practical steps?
Yeah, sure. So I've always thought of entrepreneurship as a series of baby steps. With each business you do, you're creating more people in your network, you have more of your own capital, you're getting better experience, you're sort of forming teams. So I don't think you have to try to smack it out of the park in your first deal. I think what's exciting about entrepreneurship is you create these businesses, and it's the businesses and the longevity or the value that you create inside that business, which really is the goal. that may lead to a trade sale for your first few deals. Some of them may not be successful, but you're still building that experience. So I think the first thing is treating entrepreneurship as a series of steps. I think the next thing is really spotting the big trends. It's always much easier to swim with the tide. So in our space, you know, we saw, if you think about market size, consumer is the biggest market in the world. No one really likes paying for things. A lot of technology was at the other end in the enterprise part of the market. But we saw small business as probably the biggest market after consumer, but probably the biggest monetizable opportunity on the web. And as I said before, the technology change which allowed us to access that market was the cloud, which meant the distribution costs completely changed. So that was important. And then ensuring you have the right capital to execute your plan. And again, I don't think you have the right to do that right at the very beginning. And at the very beginning, it is, you know, you go through the angel investment processes, you get funded, you show people a great experience, and that allows you to do more and more.
CEO and founder of Xero, Rod Drew, is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. So why do you think most people struggle to scale globally? What do you think is holding them back, or what do you think they're doing wrong when they attempt to do that?
I think one of the interesting things that we had starting our business from a small set of rocks in the South Pacific is we only have 4 million potential consumers. So we had to think about going global from day one. You just couldn't build a significant enough business when you've got sort of, you know, such a small market to feed off. So that was a big thing for us. If you're from a smaller country, you have to think global from day one. Whereas you're in some of the larger markets, they tend to, you know, you can just almost drive to all of your customers, or, you know, you're just going cross state to get to massive, massive markets. So I think the difference from being outside of the US is you do naturally think globally. And I think some of the lessons that we've learned from having to do that very early are very relevant to businesses inside the US and ones all over the world. The experience that we've found is there are countries which kind of group together which have similar sort of rules. So, for example, the Commonwealth countries have very similar tax structures. So the marginal cost of building business software is relatively small. But the clue there would be look for global opportunities where you don't have to do a lot of customization per country. And then the biggest thing is actually building teams in those countries. And some of the exciting things that we're seeing now is the world's completely changed with the internet. So you don't necessarily have to build the global teams like we do in our space. You can build products and people can find you.
Rod, what do you think is maybe one of the most important things when it comes to scaling as we wrap up? Just in a nutshell, what's one of the most important things that people need to absolutely know when it comes to scaling?
It's all about people. And you know, you have to get into the sort of the servant leadership model. You know, when you see cultural differences that cross different countries, if you're at the central head office, you need to be able to put the best people you can in each country. And to do that is not a command and control type structure. You need to be, I find that my responsibility is making sure the business has the resources. I've got to make sure that we get the best people we can at the stage we are in each of our markets. And then it's about how do you get the resources to those smart people, empower them, because you're hiring smart people to be smart. So being very clear about what the vision and the mission is of the company, ensuring that everyone's contributed to and buy into that. And then as a servant leader, you make sure that your great people that you've hired have all the resources to be successful. So the sort of things you want to be saying in meetings is, how can I help you? What's blocking you? What homework are you giving me? And by starting with that type of attitude where you're empowering others, ensuring they have the resources, they can just get on, because you want to scale these businesses all in parallel all over the world. So I think getting to that type of model is a real key difference.
I 100% agree with you, Rod, and I really appreciate you for coming on the show and sharing that amazing information with us. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that the host nor Business Rockstars is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.